1 Timothy 2 instructs us to pray for those who are in authority over us. In America, we not only have the right to pray, but also the right and responsibility to vote. How do you know which candidate will uphold biblical values, though? FloridaVotesValues.com now has local voter guides available in several counties. Visit FloridaVotesValues.com to learn where the candidates stand on life, liberty, marriage, sex ed, transgender bathrooms, taxes, the Second Amendment, critical race theory, defund the police, and more. Again, visit FloridaVotesValues.com.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
We are continuing our sermon series, applying biblical principles to government. And we are doing so in preparation of the primary election that will be held in the state of Florida August 23rd, that'll be the day of election. Some people are already voting and have been voting for some time, even for around a month by mail, and others will be voting soon, early voting. It is important for Christians to be registered to vote, but not just to vote for any person, but to educate themselves about what God says about issues and also where the candidates stand on issues. And we actually have been preaching about what God says about issues, and this is the fourth Sunday that we've been preaching on this. And we have a website, FloridaVotesValues.com, FLVotesValues.com, where you can actually get voter guides that will help you and help you know where the candidates stand on issues. And we do have voter guides in local counties and select counties. If your county's not one of them and you want to help make create a voter guide next election cycle for your county, let us know. And we can actually help you with that. We have the training and the expertise. Really, it only takes about 30 hours to produce a local voter guide for your county. But we're going to actually review some of what we've talked about in the past, cover new ground today. It is important when we know that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And we know that in America, we actually have the right to and the responsibility to vote for those who are in authority, so we can actually elect the righteous to be in authority. So let us do that, and we're going to do that by first of all making sure we're registered to vote, by educating ourselves about what God says about the issues, also educating ourselves about where the candidates stand on those issues, and then going out and voting according to biblical values. Francis Gimke, the Reverend Francis Gimke, in Equality of Right for All Citizens, Black and White Alike, said this: If the time ever comes when we shall go to pieces, it will be from inward corruption, from the disregard of right principles, from losing sight of the fact that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. The secession of the southern states in 1860 was a small matter with the secession of the Union itself from the greater principles enunciated in the Declaration of Independence, in the Golden Rule, in the Ten Commandments, in the Sermon on the Mount. Unless we hold firmly to these great fundamental principles of righteousness, our union will be only a covenant with death and an agreement with hell. And again, we're going to just briefly review some of the previous topics that we've talked about, you can actually go to our church website, covenanttabernacle.com, our church YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle, our church Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center, and you can see some of these principles, and you can watch the previous sermons. But first, we saw that rulers must recognize God as our creator, and this is really where it starts. If God is our creator, we're subject to his standards, subject to his laws. Rulers must read God's law and fear and obey God. Rulers must be just. Also, judges must judge the people justly. Our constitution and laws must be based on God's law, that rulers must defend innocent human life, not just some innocent human life, but every innocent human life should be protected by love and by law. Rulers must also defend marriage as God has defined marriage. Rulers must return the law of God, prayer, the Bible, and creation science to schools, including public schools. Rulers must live within their means. And to do this, really many of the programs and the policies that we have in place need to be undone. And really, I need to do what I can do, and my family needs to do what I can't do, and other private citizens can help out where my family can't help out, and the church can help out where private citizens can't help out. And only after those have been exhausted, and really, in most cases, the government really should not come into play in helping out people or providing for people. That's really not the role of the government. You won't see, for the most part, certainly there will be limited amounts of people, or there should be limited amounts of people working for the government. There should be, obviously, for those that are working to defend our nation through the armed forces, they would be some of those. But for the most part, most of the citizens should not actually be receiving money from the government. We also see that rulers must stay within their delegated authority and provide checks and balances to other branches of government, and that rulers must keep the rule of law. This is one of the things we talked about last week, about how, boy, it's just amazing how many people are getting away with stealing, getting away with beating people, getting away even with beating up police officers, having either the police or the prosecutors or judges or all of the above, just really handling criminals with kid gloves. And why are they doing so? Because they don't believe in our current criminal justice system. And our current criminal justice system, we make no excuse about this. It is not biblical, and it's not what we should have. We actually, rulers must support biblical criminal justice reform. Now, it's not good enough to just take someone who has committed a crime and say, well, we don't believe you should go to jail, so we're not going to do anything. We're just going to let you out, and you can go and thump someone over the head tomorrow. You can go beat up a police officer. You can go steal. You can go rob from someone. It's okay, because we don't believe in sending you to jail. No, we shouldn't just do nothing for criminals. What we should do is actually reform our criminal justice system based on God's law and God's principle. And we'll read in Exodus, we see the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, but what follows in the three chapters after that are the case laws of Exodus, which actually show how the law of God should be applied. They show how what principles should be taught and how their criminal justice system should be enforced. And we're going to read just a few of those verses in Exodus chapter 22, starting in verse 9. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal, and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and from the best of his own vineyard. So here we don't see the man going to jail. We don't see him being arrested. We don't see, in some cases, there wouldn't even be a trial if the person just does what they're supposed to do. And but really, what we see here is restitution. We see a restoration of what was lost. A man allowing his animals to graze in his neighbor's field would then have to allow his neighbor's animals to graze in his field, and not just any part of his field, but the best part of his field. Verse 6, if fire breaks out and catches in thorns, so that stacked grain, standing grain, or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. So again, you have restitution. The grain, whether it's already been harvested, whether it's still in the field, it is valuable. And if someone is irresponsible and lights a fire, and that fire damages someone else's property, that person should make restitution. If it damages their grain, he should make restitution. Verse 7, if a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. And this is double restitution. This is what happens when there's purposeful stealing. When someone actually purposely steals, and according to the Bible, there should be double restitution, in some cases, 5 to 7 times restitution of certain items. But here we see, again, goods being delivered from one neighbor to another, and someone comes in and steals them. The person, if he is caught, pays double. Now, why would you have the thief pay double? By the way, the thief doesn't go to jail. The thief pays double. But what happens, the reason the thief would pay double is so that the thief learns from his mistake. So that, if you only had to give back what you had taken, well, then you might as well go ahead and steal, because if you get caught, all you'll have to do is give it back. But no, the thief would have to give back twice as much. So if the thief had actually stolen some grain, he would have to give back twice as much grain. Or if it was money, let's say it's $50, he would have to give back $100. So the thief would pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's goods for any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or clothing, or for any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his. The cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. So here we see double restitution paid. Now, what happens today if someone is stolen from? Well, as we talked about last week, in certain cities, as long as that is under $950, well, nothing will happen to the person that steals. However, in many cities, and really according to the law, even in those cities, the person would be arrested, would be taken to jail, and would sit in jail for a considerable period of time. Even with speedy trials, they're not quite speedy these days. Meanwhile, the person that was stolen from would not have restitution. In fact, the person that was stolen from will have to pay taxes to keep the guy or the woman that stole from him or her in jail. And so this is what we actually see happening. And if restitution happens, it's single restitution, not double restitution. Now, this is bad for the person that was stolen from, because that person doesn't get quick restitution, much less double restitution. That person also has to pay taxes to keep the thief in jail. And it's not good for the thief either, because if you have ever gone to jail, I have been in jail for peacefully protecting preborn children, not for stealing or robbing or mugging or thugging. I've been in jail for good things, for peacefully protecting preborn children. But I saw the effects of jail on the people. And you can imagine, if you were to go to jail and to be in jail for a month or two or three or four or five or a few years, you can imagine that very likely you would lose the place that you're living. Very likely your belongings would be thrown away. Very likely you might lose your vehicle. You would probably lose your job. And when you got out of jail, you would have, unless you had someone that loved you enough to take you in, you would have nowhere to go. You would be homeless, jobless, and who wants to hire a criminal, someone with a criminal record? So what would you do? Most likely, you'd go rob and mug and thug, and you would actually continue this life of crime until you were rearrested and put into jail, and the cycle would continue again. What happens with biblical justice system is you have the criminal actually learning personal responsibility, and you have the person that was stolen from having what they were stolen restored, and not only restored, but also having double restitution, which helps them out so that they could actually helps them out by compensating them for the loss of their time, the loss of whatever it was that was taken from them for that period of time. So we do need criminal justice reform. However, that criminal justice reform doesn't just mean we're going to ignore the criminals and ignore what is happening. Criminal justice reform means that we're going to actually look at the Bible. We actually should look at the Bible. We should study to see what God says about criminal justice reform. And this, by the way, is just one portion of this. And you can find case laws in not only Exodus 22, 21 through 23, but also in Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy as well, as you read through those passages. Rulers must also defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We see in Psalm 33, verses 16 through 20, no king is saved by the multitude of an army. A mighty man is not delivered by great strength. A horse is a vain hope for safety. Neither shall it deliver any by great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, and on those who hope in his mercy to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waits for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. So we see that, first of all, kings do engage with armies to defend the nation, but the ultimate defense of the nation really comes from God, which is why it is important for us as a nation to bless God, as opposed to singing God Bless America. We need to make sure that we are blessing God, that we are keeping his commandments and his precepts. Rulers must also defend Israel. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, we read, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So we should actually, as a nation, defend and protect and have good relationships with Israel. Rulers must also protect our borders. And when we talk about border security, really, the Bible talks about a few things. And one thing in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 22, we see you shall have the same law for the stranger and for the one of your own country, for I am the Lord your God. So even those who were strangers were supposed to keep their law. It's important before we let someone into this country that we make sure that they're going to keep our laws. And if that person is coming in illegally and not the right way, well, it's a pretty good chance that if they're willing to break our immigration laws, they may very well be willing to break other laws as well. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, verses 12 through 13, we read, "Gather the people together, men and women, the little ones and the stranger who is within the gates, who is within your gates, that they may hear, that they may learn to fear the Lord your God and carefully observe all the laws, all the words of this law, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you cross the Jordan to possess." So here we see really that not only the citizens and the people that were Israelites, but also the strangers were to hear the law of God. It is very important that we make sure that the people coming into this country fear God and will keep our laws. Another principle with dealing with immigrants is that our laws should never allow the mistreatment of strangers. So in Exodus chapter 22, verse 21, again, another part of the case laws of Exodus, "You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." And of course, they were oppressed in Egypt. The children of Israel were oppressed in Egypt. Now this is something that definitely what our laws in America allowing and really not enforcing the laws and allowing illegal immigration to happen in our country is allowing actually the mistreatment of strangers. You see, when someone comes here illegally, they are afraid to go to the police if something has happened to them. They also aren't citizens and don't have a legal means of actually going and getting a bank account or someplace that they can safely store their money. So typically they walk around with a lot of money or they have a lot of money in their house. They're ripe for theft. And the people that are citizens of this country that are thugs know that they very likely have money with them and that they also are not going to call the police. And of course, now to make matters worse, in some cities, it won't matter even if they do call the police because nothing will happen to the criminals. So we're really setting these immigrants that are coming here illegally up to be mistreated. We also have seen with the crisis that we have at the southern border in America, we have seen really young girls being raped on the way. We have seen kids being used for the sex trade and actually being brought into this country as really with human trafficking as a part of what's going on. We also have seen the conditions of the people that are coming to this country, the the conditions that they are traveling in is very bad. Not only are the girls, the teenage girls, being raped, and so much so that they're actually put on birth control so that they don't become pregnant on this trip, because their parents know that they'll be raped multiple times on the way. But there was actually a truck, you probably heard about this, a tractor trailer that actually was found in San Antonio with 50 dead or dying migrants. It had actually passed through a border crossing inspection and wasn't inspected. The high heat actually killed most of the people that were inside. However, there was a young girl that managed to climb out after it was stopped. And a person, Roberto Quintero, said this. He came upon the truck and called 911. He said, "I didn't get her name or think to ask where she came from. She just kept hanging on my arm, screaming, 'Help me, help me,' in Spanish." And at least 53 of the 64 people inside, men, women, and some children who came from countries including Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, died from the extreme heat inside the truck, which did not have any working cooling system on a day where the temperatures topped 100 degrees. Several others were treated at a local hospital. So we need to make sure that we are enforcing our laws on the borders, and that we are making sure that the people coming to this country are people that are righteous, people that will keep our laws, people that love God. And also, we need to make sure that our laws, or lack of enforcing our laws, does not put strangers at risk in our country. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
First Timothy 2 instructs us to pray for those who are in authority over us. In America, we not only have the right to pray, but also the right and responsibility to vote. How do you know which candidate will uphold biblical values, though? FloridaVotesValues.com now has local voter guides available in several counties. Visit FloridaVotesValues.com to learn where the candidates stand on life, liberty, marriage, sex ed, transgender bathrooms, taxes, the Second Amendment, critical race theory, defund the police, and more. Again, visit FloridaVotesValues.com.